We are holding on. We're holding on Cofield Tess Ahmed Bays about a quarter of the way down the Ahmed. Quarter of the way, maybe whatever. Line begins. The line about halfway down the narrow line. The line begins. Umar. All right. We started a discussion. Rav Oshia asked the question: what if you have two shomrim for food that can they combine together? So we said we obviously can't be talking about one shomer on top of another. For example, the different layers of an onion. Or the different, or whatever, because we said we established before that when it comes to one layer on top of another, the layer closest to the food is considered a shomer. Anything beyond that is anything further out than that is not considered a shomer.
Yeah.
So rather, we said Rav Oshia's question is: suppose that you divided the food. So according to Rashi, the point is that you started out with a kvesa of food and then you divided it in half. And therefore, so now the shomer is divided along with it, or it was even two separate entities to begin with. For example, two small onions, which the two of them together make up a kvesa with their peels. So the question would be whether the peels combine or not. According to Tosfos, the case was they're separate onions, obviously, right? But the question is whether yes or no. And then according to Tosfos, the case was that the kvesa of food is still together. But the question is that you broke the shomer in half. You have, for example, a kazayas of meat where you cut the skin in half, so you have one piece attached to one and then to one part and one piece attached to the other part. Anyway, Rav Oshia's question is, does the shomer still count in that case? So we started by bringing a proof from a Mishnah from Masechta Uktzin, which we quoted yesterday, involving the pods of peas versus beans. And we said, we argued there that we're talking about the pods as a shomer, right? We said that Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that the pod is no longer transmitting tumah when or has anything to do with tumah v'tara when it's a pod of beans, but it's metame if it's a kidneys, which are smaller beans, a portal is a larger bean.
Piece of meat where the shomer is divided.
Well, the point is, in other words, that you don't, but the point is, you don't really have to the thing as a pod, as a pea pod, that's going to have, that where the whole thing by itself is going to be the size of a kibbeh. Pea pods and then kidney pods are not that big. So therefore, if we see, nevertheless, that Rav Elazar ben Azariah is saying that when it comes to a pod of kidneys, then it'll still be able to combine together because he wants to be able to use it for handling it to keep the peas or the kidneys from getting dirty. So then we see that it can be a shomer, even if it's a shomer of a piece less than a kvesa, as long as altogether, in aggregate, you have a kvesa of food altogether with the pods. And he said, not really a proof because Rav Acha Breidirava said, we're not necessarily talking about the pods. We could be talking about the stem, the stalks, to which the pods are attached. And there it's not an issue of a shomer, it's an issue of a yad. And a yad.
There's a yad and a shomer.
That's fine, but the point is, the pod is basically a shomer. That's what we said, because he wants to keep it in order when he's handling the peas or the beans to keep them from getting dirty by way of the pod. That would be a shomer. As opposed to a yad is something that you use strictly for handling it, which would be, for example, the stalk. So in that case, then it's only a matter of yad, and instead, not the word is not the mashmishon, but rather the kashmishon. He wants to be able to use it, to be able to handle it. So in that case, that's no proof about. So it's no proof about a shomer that was divided because here we're not talking about a shomer; we're talking about a yad, and a yad has different dinim.
Because he wants to use it.
Bacher, can you mind? Do you mind closing the door, please? Okay. Okay. The point is, that's what we're talking about. The pod can be used as a shomer. That's fine. The pod automatically is a shomer. But what we're saying is you don't have a proof from that Mishnah because we're not necessarily talking about the pod. The expression that's used in the Mishnah over there is shavit. Shavit doesn't necessarily mean the pod. It could mean the stick. It could mean the stalk to which the pods are attached, that the pods grow from. And in that case, the stalk is only a yad, not a shomer. So in that case, there's nothing to talk about. We can't talk about whether if you had, for example, different pea pods with peas inside them, do they combine together for a kibbeh or not? No proof.
Because
we don't know, because we're talking about a yad rather than a shomer. Okay, so that's where we're holding. Line begins with mine. Toshma, we'll bring another proof. The Tanadre Rabbi Shmuel. We learned in the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, the beginning of the Perek, Apolzera Zerua Sherizareya. We said that the pasuk that teaches us about Tumas Ochlin mentioned seeds of seed-bearing plants. meaning kederach shebnei adam makiyim lezuriya. It means that the seeds become tame the way that people take them out to plant them. Chita b'klipasa, wheat grains in their shells. Or z'ora b'klipasa, barley grains in their shells. V'adashim b'klipasa, lentils in their shells. So now we see that a shell. The pashtus, we're not, as we know that a wheat grain is not the size of a kibetza all by itself, and even with its shell, it's obviously not adding up to a kibetza. So therefore, we must be talking about multiple grains that have their shells on them, and therefore, that a shomer can combine together, even if it's shomerim of individual bits of food, as long as altogether they add. Now, Rashi points out the Gemara could use the answer over here, like it used before, that it's different when it's a berry. We learn at the bottom of Amud Aleph, we talk about that maybe it's different, maybe a grain of wheat is a berry or not. Again, in some senses, yes, in some senses, no. It's not a barrier in the sense, for example, of something that's not bottled by Aleph, because for that it has to be from a living creature, and it has to be something that was also from when it grew, et cetera, according to all the various definitions that we talked about back in Perek Din Anosha. But nevertheless, though, it is, after all, something that was created the way it is. It's still in its original state as a grain of wheat. So therefore, arguably, just like we said before, in the case of Yad, one second, that's what we're going to actually talk about, the stalk of wheat in a second. But right now, we're assuming that each individual grain is a berry. And therefore, the same way as we said before, that, for example, we said that whether you can have a shomer for an individual grain like that, and we brought this and we said berry is shiny, that a berry is different, that Rav would say that you can't have a shomer for less than the size of a bean, but he would make an exception when the thing is a berry. So Rashi says the Gemara could have used
that
because we said logically that Rav would assume that The point is, it wasn't a contradiction to Rav. So over here, Rashi says we could have used the same answer. However, the Gemara considers that to be a bit of a doichet. So the Gemara would rather find a different answer. Tosfos HaRosh says actually that no, the Gemara could not have used that answer over here, because it's one thing to say about a shomer in general that a shomer should have significance when it's attached to one grain because the berry are fine. But here we're not talking about one individual shomer. We're talking about a bunch of individual shomerim that you want to combine together. That not necessarily, just because the berry doesn't necessarily give it any greater significance. Okay. Anyway, so again, the question is, therefore, so we see, evidently, yet we're saying that individual grains of wheat or barley or whatever count together with their shells to make up a kibetza, and they're metametumos in that way. So there you see that it applies even if you have multiple ones together. And the answer is, kid'omer of acha brei d'rova, the same answer that acha brei d'rova used in connection with the Mishnah that we quoted before about the pea pods, that the kulcha, we're not talking about the pods, we're talking about the stalks. We're talking about the stalks, umishum yad, and then we're not talking about a shomer anymore, we're talking rather about a yad, hachanami, the same thing we can answer. Over here, b'shedra, we can be talking about not the individual grain of wheat, but we can be talking about the entire collection of wheat kernels or barley kernels or whatever that you have at the top of the stalk over there, the whole row of seeds that you have over there, which all together, they all are a shomer for each other in the sense that if one of them falls off, then it weakens the whole structure. Well, that's the point. In other words, now we're not talking about berry anymore. Now what we're saying is the reason why we can say that the wheat grain and that the shells of the wheat grains or the barley grains or whatever count together, it wouldn't necessarily work if we were talking about separated wheat grains and barley grains that still have their shells on them. Rather, we're talking about they're still on the stalk. They're still attached to the stalk, and therefore each one of them is a shomer for the other one, in effect, because they all together over there, they keep each other in place. And if one of them, if in particular, if their shell of one of them falls off, then the shells will be
each other by being on the stalk.
Yeah, because in other words, like this, they all make up a structure together. They all hold each other in place, kind of. And if one of them gets peeled, then the rest of them, the peels also more likely going to fall. So that's different. Okay, so the question is, let's consider what does a wheat stalk look like? You have rows of kernels. You have at the bottom, it goes up, 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 and then in each one around it, you have like that. So the question is, b'shleima ilusa tzricha l'tatiyosa. Okay, in that case, I can understand the ones higher up need to have the ones below them intact, because if the ones below them, or even the peels of the ones below them, fall off, then eventually that's going to make room for the peels of the upper ones to fall off. So the lower ones, so the peels of the lower ones function as a shomer for the upper ones. For the upper ones, because their peels, when they're in place, prevent the peels of the upper ones from falling off, because they hold them in place. You have a tight, a tight structure over there. So the lower ones help protect the upper ones, but the lower ones don't need the upper ones. Even if the upper ones get peeled off, or even if they fall off, nevertheless, the bottom ones still remain intact, and yet we're saying that all of it counts together as a shomer. We're not distinguishing between the upper part and the lower part of the stem. So how does that work? The answer is b'chad dara. The answer is we're not saying that the peels would combine together throughout the whole stalk. We mean all the grains that are in one row around the stalk. So you have the lowest row, then you have a row above it, then you have a row above that, et cetera. So within each row, each one is helping to hold the other ones in place, because they're all tightly stacked together around the stalk, around the stem, and therefore if one of them gets peeled, then the other peels are going to fall off as well. But not
the part of the kernel is close to the branch,
In other words, you have the stalk, it grows a couple of feet up in the air or whatever, and then you have the kernels that are attached to the stalk all around. So the point is, the lowest row of kernels, fine, the lowest row doesn't need the rows above it. Even if the rows above it fall off, the lower rows will still stay where they are. But within that row itself, all of them, you have five or six or seven or whatever it is around the stalk, all of them are holding each other in place, kind of. And the shells of them are holding each other in place. Therefore, those shells can all count together. They can all be considered a shomer of each other. Okay. So the question is still, if you're talking about only one row, remember, you need a kabeza in order to be metame tumas oichon. So the question is, where do you ever have a wheat stalk where in one row around the stalk you're going to have a complete kabeza of food, even if you count the shells? The answer is yes, the chiti de Shimon ben Shatta. Yes, as a matter of fact, when you have the wheat that grew in the times of Shimon ben Shatta, the Gemara tells us in Tainis that during the time of Shimon ben Shatta, it was a good time for the Jewish people. They were keeping mitzvahs the way they should. And the Gemara, the middle of the period of the second Beis Mikdash, the period of later Hashmonaim, whatever. So the people were keeping mitzvahs the way they were supposed to and learning Torah the way they were supposed to. And therefore Hashem benched them. It only rained on Tuesday nights and on Friday nights, which are the best times for it to rain, because Tuesday night people don't go out because of Mazikin in those times. You have a problem with that. Friday night people don't go out because they stay home and have their Shabbos meal. So it rained only those times in order not to inconvenience people. And still, the wheat and the various other grains grew exceptionally large. It actually brings over here from the Gemara over there that the wheat kernels grew as large as kidneys. Rashi actually says over here, apparently he had a girsa in the Gemara as large as the kidneys of a large ox. So therefore, yes.
Kidneys
of an animal. Kidneys, yeah. And Rashi says kidneys of a large ox. So the point is, yes, in that generation you could have, therefore, and then in fact the Gemara says that the Chachamim preserved samples of these for future generations, so people will realize how good you have it when you keep mitzvahs and what you're losing when you don't. Anyway, the point is that in Shimon ben Shatta's time, sure, you could have one row surrounding a stalk of grain, which equals up to a kabeza of food, especially if you count the peels. So yeah, in fact, the Gemara says, Hashi the Ossis Lahachi. Okay, you know what? If you're getting to that point, then already chitanami. You don't even have to say you're talking about an entire row around the stalk. You could even say you're talking about one individual. You can say you're talking about one individual grain of wheat. Same thing, the chiti de Shimon ben Shatta. Again, if these grains of wheat were so big in Shimon ben Shatta's time, then any one of them by itself, together with shomer, would equal up to a kabeza. So therefore, yeah, they're for sure. You could talk about that a shomer is significant because it's enclosing a kabeza of food.
Right. That would be any period.
That's the only period we know about. I don't know. That's true, but it doesn't say that they doesn't mention that they had that bracha in the times of Chizkiyo, as far as I know. Good question, though, but I don't know. Okay. Tosfos points out that also that same Gemara mentions that the lentils grew as large as gold dinners. So the same thing. Once you include the shomer, then already you have a kibbutz. Okay. Fine. Okay. So far, So far, what we're left with, therefore, is the answer to Reb Oshia. So far, the Gemara actually hasn't given an answer to Reb Oshia's question. Maybe a Shomer Shechilkoi combined together. Maybe not, because maybe the Brisos over here are talking about the individual grains of wheat or lentils or whatever that they had in Shimon HaShatach times, and then it's not a Shomer Shechilkoi, but maybe not. Maybe it's talking about regular grains, and then we would see that it works.
And we don't know.
So we don't know. The Rambam over here, Paskins Lakula, which leads a number of the Mepharshim, meaning that it's not a status. And a couple of them, of course, should ask why, if the Gemara is left with a suffix, why shouldn't we pass the Mechorah? If not Mitzarek, means that you need, that the Shomer doesn't count together to make up a Kabeza, so therefore you have less of a chance of the food becoming Yomei. That's the Kula. Yeah. But so they ask why the Rambam does that, but nevertheless, that's how it is. The Rambam understands over here that the conclusion is it's the Kula. Okay. Fine. Gufa. Getting back to something that we mentioned earlier in the Sugya, we said Shnei Asamas, if you have two bones, Ba'alei and Shnei Chatzoi Zeitim, where each bone has on it a half kezias of meat, human bones with human flesh on them, that is, V'hichnis Roshei and Shnayim Labais, a person stuck the bare ends of the bones into a house, so the ends that have the flesh on them are outside, and only the bare ends are inside, Habayis Malalei, and the house is overhanging those bones. Habayis Tomei, so the house becomes Tomei because the bones are a yad, and they bring the truma of the kezias of flesh into the house.
Even though
the flesh is outside, but because the bones function as a yad. So the bones themselves are not able to be metamei ba'oil again because you don't have enough bones together. You'd need either a certain volume of bones or you'd need them to make up the certain... No, that's the point. In other words, if you have, for example, a quarter calf of bones, or if you have enough bones to make up most of the bones in a human body, 125 of them, or you have a complete spine, et cetera, then the house would be metamei ba'oil just from that alone. But here we're talking about, you have two individual bones. They don't make up a quarter calf between them. They're not roi binyan or roi binyan. A calf is... A calf is four logim. A log is about a pint, give or take. So you're talking somewhere around 3 or 4 pounds. So okay, a quarter of a calf, one log, therefore would be around a pound, give or take, let's say. Okay, the point is that so these bones don't make up that. They're not roiv binyan or roiv minyan or any of that. So therefore they're metame, a person who touches them or carries them, but they're not metame b'oil. But over here, what you have is each one has a half kezias of flesh on it, which granted that's outside the house, but we're saying, the Tanakama of this Braisa is saying that the bones bring the truma into the house. Because they're a yad. And we said...
Did we say that before?
We mentioned... We mentioned that's why we're bringing this in. Gufo, we said...
Mosi
and Nachnit, yeah.
So the yad is Mosi.
We said the yad is Machnit. The yad, no, Mosi, it is. It's taking the truma of the flesh and bringing it into the house. Right. Okay. Okay, and then we said, in Bryce, the Yehuda ben Mekusa Oimer Mishum Rav Yaakov, how could that be? Hey, Shnei Asamas Mitzar from a Chazayis. How can two bones combine together for a Chazayis? So we brought this before because we were discussing the question whether a Yad is considered a Yad if it's attached to less than a Chazayis, which we said that Rav holds that not, and we discussed this Bryce according to Rav versus according to Rav Yehuda. And now we're getting into an analyzing the Braisa itself a little bit. That's we said before that there's two possible ways of explaining the Braisa. We could be talking about the bones of a yad because there's only meat on the there's only flesh on the outside. We could be talking about they're a shomer because there's marrow on the inside as well. And therefore, Rav could explain it either way and explain and say that he follows one or the other opinion in the Braisa. And Rav Yochanan would say that it's dafka yad, and he would say that he holds like the Tanakh. Fine. So that's we brought that Braisa before to bring up that point to discuss in connection with Rav and Rav Yechanan, but now we're going to analyze the Braisa for itself. So, Omer Ish Lakish, Lo Shonu Ela Etzem Dehavi Yad. This whole discussion is only talking about a bone which is actually able to function as a yad because you can use it to handle the flesh that's attached to it. Avol Nima Lo Have Ya Yad. But he says, suppose that there was a hair attached to the flesh, that wouldn't be considered a yad. Because that wouldn't be considered a yad at, because it's too thin. If you try to pick it up with it, it'll, the hair will break. The hair will break. So therefore, it's a shomer. Now you could argue, so what? We already established. No. Because okay, it's not a shomer for the whole thing, but it's still something. It's somehow a layer over the flesh. That's enough. However, the point is, now we would argue, we would think, we've been learning all this time that a shomer is stronger than a yad. So therefore, if it's a shomer and not a yad, what's the difference? Rashi says the difference is a yad transmits tumor in either direction whether it, however it's attached to the piece that it's attached to, even if, for example, you have a piece of the yam that sticks out way outside of the piece that it's attached to, it still transmits tumor. Whereas a shomer, only if you touch the part
if
of the
piece has enough.
Well, yeah, if it has enough capacity, right. But the point is, in other words, as opposed to, for example, with a shomer, if you have, let's say, for example, a kazayas of meat attached to a piece of skin, which we said the skin is a shomer, you would only become tome if you touch the part of the skin that is adjacent to the meat, or that's on the opposite side of the meat or whatever. So you touch this side of it, fine, you'll become tome. But you touch this part over here. Okay, let's say you have a piece of meat stuck to the skin. So if you touch the other side directly opposite the meat, you become tummy. But if you touch this side or this side or whatever, you don't become tummy. That's the difference. That's the one chumrah that a yad has over a shomer. So therefore, if we say over here that the hair is... So therefore, if we say, if Rish Lakish is saying that a hair does not count as a yad, only as a shomer, that would mean, therefore, if the hair is not, if you're touching a part of the hair that's not directly opposite the flesh, then you're not going to become tummy. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, even a hair can be considered a yad. And therefore, it would be metame even if you touch it not on the side opposite the meat.
So is it a yad?
According to Rabbi Yechanan, yes. According to Rish Lakish, no. That's what we just said. Eisrei Rabbi Yechanan l'Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yechanan says to Rish Lakish, you're telling me that a hair is not considered a yad, but I have a contradiction. We have a bright, we have a Mishnah later in our parak, actually. Or she yesh all of kazayas butter. If you have a piece of skin that you have on a kazayas of flesh, then hanegeya b'tsiv hamimenu. Then if a person touches a tsiv which sticks out of it, a tsiv, Rashi explains, is a thread of flesh that's sticking out from it. Or v'sayda shekinegdo. Or if you touch a hair that is opposite the meat, tome. Then he becomes tome. Now my lav mishum yad. So, says Rabbi Yechanan, shouldn't we assume that the Mishnah is telling us why is he tome? Because it's a yad. And in that case, Rashi says, when we say then shekinegdo, when we say that Sira shekinegdo, Rabbi Yechanan would say it doesn't have to be kinegdo, actually. Even if it wasn't exactly opposite the meat, it would still be tome, because it's still a yad. And therefore, if you have a piece of meat, you have a yad that sticks out from it at an angle or something, it's still considered a yad, but it's not considered a shomer. So Rabbi Yochanan is arguing. Now, the reason Rabbi Yochanan would argue that is because we already established before that you don't have a shomer or gabe shomer. Now, when we have a hair that's sticking out from it, the pashkus, what you have is you have meat, you have flesh, and then you have a hair sticking out of the skin.
Sticking out of the skin.
Well, yeah, because that's where hair grows, the pashkus, out of the skin.
But you had a hair that came from out.
No, we mean a hair that's sticking out. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan is going to have to assume it's a shomer or gabe shomer. We know that doesn't work. Therefore, obviously, the hair is not metame mishum shomer. It must be that it's another part of the yad. Yeah. So therefore, so you see that that even a hair is considered a yad. The answer is why? No. Rish Lakish will answer mishum shomer. No, we do mean that it's considered a shomer. Question is, meat a shomer or gabe shomer? What do you mean? You don't have a shomer on top of a shomer? The answer is chalchule mechalchul. The answer is that actually the hair sticks in all the way through the skin, all the way through the flesh. When a hair grows out of the
hair,
well, it goes. It depends how deep you consider the skin to extend. I mean, not necessarily is the definition. I understand that, but I'm saying there are different layers of the skin, but depending on what you consider skin versus muscle, halacha, the definition of them in halacha may not necessarily be the same as the medical definition. Whatever it is, the point is that the hair sticks in deeply enough that it can be considered attached to the meat. Again, especially because actually a little later in our parak, we're going to talk about, we mentioned it briefly earlier in our Masechta, that there are certain kinds of skin, certain kinds of animals or certain parts, certain areas of skin on an animal that are considered like flesh because they're soft and they're edible. So maybe what it is here also, you have different layers of the skin and the inner one.
Hair is not edible.
No, you have it.
And hair is not edible.
The point is, the layer of the skin that the hair grows out of might be soft enough to be more edible. Anyway, the point is, that's what we're saying over here, that the hair goes all the way through the skin, and therefore it's not a shomer or gabe shomer. If you have one part of the meat is protected by the skin, and a different part is protected by the hair,
then
it would be a shomer or gabe shomer, and then Rish Lakish would have to agree that it doesn't work. Right. However, Rav Acha bar Yaakov asks on that, if you're telling me that the hair goes all the way through, Elamayasa, by that logic, tefillin hefi kasvinim. How are you ever able to write tefillin on a skin? After all, we know that tefillin, you have to have a perfect writing. You can't have holes in the letters, otherwise it's possible. And over here, if you're telling me that you have holes in the skin, then if you have holes going all the way through the skin from the hairs, then of necessity, then how are you ever able to write tefillin? That's what we're going to talk about, tiny versus not. But wait, Rav Acha bar Yaakov's question is that on the face of it, there shouldn't be a difference the size of a hole. If there are holes there, and in fact, I think the Rashba points out that, now, why is he mentioning Dr. Tefillin? On the face of it, you could ask the same thing about a Sefer Torah and about a mezuzah. The reason is like this. So you have in a couple of places, the Gemara mentions, I think we learned it in Menachos, it comes up in a few places in Shas, that you have like this. There's an unsplit skin, which is called gvil. Right, and then you can split the skin into two layers. One is called klap, one is called duchsistos. There's a machlokas rishonim, and actually there are different yersois in the Rambam, which is which. We know for a fact that, we know from various Gemara,
we all agree
what gvil is, it's the unsplit skin. And we also know that Halacha L'Moshe Sinai tells us, mentioned in various places in Shas, that a Sefer Torah ideally should be written on gvil, tefillin on klap, and mezuzah on duchsistos. In practice nowadays, we write them all on class for various reasons, but whatever. That was how it was supposed to be originally.
That should be written really on
gvil. In principle, Sefer Torah should be written on gvil. Nobody does that nowadays. For one thing, it would make the Sefer Torah extremely heavy. Well, not only expensive, it would also make it extremely heavy. Anyway, the point is, what also those Gemaras tell us, that on class you're supposed to write on the side that was closer to the muscles, on the side closer to the inside, and on duchsistos you're supposed to write on the side that was originally closer to the outside. The question becomes, which layer is klap and which is duchsistos? The way that we hold, and the way that we do nowadays, and the way most of the Rishonim hold, is that klap is the outer layer, and duchsistos is the inner layer closer to the muscles. So therefore, in other words, it comes out. You take the skin, you split it in half, you have the klap, which is the outer part. Maybe stronger, I don't know. So you have the outer part, and you write on this side of it, the side where it was split from the other layer. Duchsistos, for mezuzah, you would write on this side, also the place where it was split from the other layer. Okay, on the other hand, there are gersois in the Rambam, and there's a truva from the Rambam which seems to imply that this is in fact his actual opinion, that it's the other way around. Klap is the inner layer, duchsistos is the outer layer. The Rambam has a truva where he discusses a bit, and it comes out from that truva that he holds the other way around. Klap is the inner layer, and duchsistos is the outer layer. No, not everybody agrees on that. The Tosfos, for example, disagrees. Many other Rishonim disagree. Lamaisa, we don't hold that way. When we write, if that were the case, all our we say that klap is the outer layer. If we didn't, if we were, if at most Sfaradim, I think you have some Yemenites, maybe some Sfaradim also who hold like Rambam. I don't know, but anyway. But the point is, according to that way of looking at things, according to that way of the Rambam and the Truva, it comes out that tefillin are the only thing that are written on this side of the skin. Gvil, you would write on this side, the hair side. Duchsistos, you're also writing on this side, the hair side. Only tefillin are you writing on the inner side. And the point is, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, according to that, is asking that even with tefillin, where you're writing on the inside layer, if you're telling me that the hair penetrates all the way through to the inner layer, then it means you have a hole there. So how are you writing tefillin? Everybody agrees that tefillin are written on the inside of the klap. The question is, what is klap?
Some say
that klap is the outer layer, which is how we hold, and you have this truva of the Rambam where he says that klap is the inner layer. Anyway, the point is that Rashba explains that part of Akiva Yaakov specifically mentions tefillin. It fits well with that opinion. Anyway, the point is, in Ksiva Tamla, tefillin, you have to have a perfect writing. You can't have holes in the letters. The letdown, you're not going to have that. However, the Gemara says, Ish Tenitze, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, when he asked that question, he forgot Hod Amri B'Marav, a din that they said in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Kol Nekev Shad Yoy Over Olav, any hole that's so small that the ink will pass right over it and not drip out through the hole, right? Ein Nekev is not considered a hole as far as Halacha is concerned. So therefore, yes, there can be microscopic holes in there from the hair, from the roots of the hairs, but it doesn't matter because the ink glides right over it. So that doesn't prove anything. So Rav Acha, everybody agrees with that.
Everybody agrees.
Rav Acha bar Yaakov forgot that when he asked this question. Okay, fine. So that's one answer, is that we can be talking about that the hair over here, again, penetrates all the way through the skin, and therefore Rish Lakish is going to consider it a shomer. Therefore, he says that's the only reason why we're saying that if you touch the hair, you become tameh, because the shomer. Had it been a yad, it wouldn't work, because as it is, it's on top of the skin, and you don't have shomer agabe shomer. He says it's a shomer, not because it's a shomer agabe shomer, but because it itself is part of the shomer, because it penetrates all the way through to the muscles. It penetrates all the way through to the skin, through the whole layer of skin. If it had been only a yad, then if it doesn't penetrate all the way through, Rish Lakish would say it can't be a yad, because it's not strong enough to pick the thing up by.
Would still be strong enough and not penetrate.
No, but one hair is not going to be strong enough to pick up a kazayis of meat. Other way, the boyasema, or another possibility, kulei mishum yad, you could answer that Rish Lakish might actually say that Mishnah is talking about a hair which does function as a yad. Rish Lakish just said that one hair cannot be a yad because it's too weak. We could say, kidja amar of ila, just like we find Rav Ila mentioning in a different connection, which we're going to quote now, the malai shaben hamaloyim, that you have a braisa that's talking about one individual bristle among a bunch of other bristles. When you look at a stalk of grain, you have the individual kernels that are in rows of up and down, as we said before, and each kernel has like a bristle on the top of it, a stiff hair that sticks up from the top of it. In other places, the Gemara calls those bristles sasa, whatever. The point is that So we have a case where the Pila explains a certain din as referring to not one individual bristle, but the whole bunch of them together. Hachanami, so the same thing. We could answer over here, b'nima shebein animin. You could answer, we're talking about you touched one particular hair, but there are actually many hairs on that skin, and therefore they can all function as a yad, because all of those hairs together, if you grab the thing by all those hairs, you'll be able to pick it up.
And they would be strong enough,
right? The Heicha Itma of Ila, where, what was the original context where Ila said his din? It was on the following Mishnah, another Mishnah from Uktin. Nalai Shabishibalim, the bristles on a stalk of grain, mitamin or matamin, vein mistafin, they can become tameh along with the food, they can cause other things to become tameh, but vein mistafin, but they don't combine. In other words, they're a classic yad. We said before that that's the rule with a yad. It brings tuma in and out. It imports and exports tuma, but it doesn't combine together to make up the kibbeza. As opposed to the shomer. So the question is, malai lamai kazi. The question is, what good does one bristle do? You can't really pick up the whole stalk of grain using one bristle. It'll break off. That's the answer. Amar Rabbi Loi. So that's the answer. Rabbi Loi says, "B'malai shebein amaloyim." We're not talking about one individual bristle. We mean there's a whole bunch of bristles over there. If you were to pick it up by all of them, then it would be enough. You would be able to pick it up. Therefore, any individual bristle there is considered part of the yad, and therefore it can transmit trauma.
So when you think of weeds, you grab a thing of weeds.
Yeah.
The big bulk of dirt can't lift it, but they shake it off.
Yeah. So we see the same thing, in other words, that Rish Lakish can say, by the same logic, if you have one individual hair only on a piece of meat, then it won't be a yad, because it's too weak to pick up with. But if you have many hairs together, each one of those hairs is part of the yad, and therefore it's a mine. Okay. Lishna Achrina Amila, another version of the discussion goes like this. Now, the first version of the discussion we had was that Rabbi Yochanan asked Rish Lakish, how can you tell me a hair is not a yad? We have a Mishnah later in our Perek that says that if you touch the hair, you become tummy. And so we started by answering maybe the hair is a shomer, and then we said that no, after all, it can be a yad. So lishnachrina, another version, goes like this. Amriba, as they say like this, hachi nami mistamber de mishum shomer. It is logical to answer that Rish Lakish would say that the reason why the hair is metame is because it functions as a shomer, not because it's a yad, because one hair is not strong enough to pick it up by, as Rish Lakish says, but rather that's a shomer, the sakadai mishum yad, because if you were going to say that, it's metame because of yad. Nima acha for my chazi, what good is one hair for? As soon as you try to pick it up, it'll break. And the answer would be, not necessarily, because to the omen of Ila b'malai shebein amaloi, and just like Rav Ila says that when you have one bristle among all the others, but the individual bristle is able to transmit trauma because it's part of a larger yad, all the bristles combined together make up a yad.
Even if one breaks?
But in other words, the point is, if you have all the bristles on there, you could pick it up by all of them. Therefore, if one individual bristle, while it's attached to the stalk, it touches other food, it will make, touches other food, it'll make a tummy. Or if that individual bristle touches a sheriff, then the whole thing is going to become tummy. Okay. Hachanami, but Nimish, they're not Nimim. The same thing you could say over here, that maybe the Mishnah means one hair among a bunch of others, so no proof necessarily. No proof necessarily that in the case of the Mishnah we're talking about that the hair over there is a shomer. It could actually be that we're talking about many hairs which together make up a yam. And again, the question would be, according to the second version, the heicha itma de Rabbi Loi, where did Rabbi Loi mention this concept about many hairs? Aha, again, it was in connection with this Mishnah in Uksin that we just quoted, Bitnan, Hamalai Shabishibolim, the bristles on a stalk of grain, mitamin or mitamin. They're able to become tome with the stalk, and they're able to transmit trauma from the stalk to other things. They ain't mixed, but they don't combine because they're a yad. And the question again was malai lamai chazi. What can you do with one bristle you can't pick it up with? And again, amar abaloi, but malai shabein amaloi. So the same thing as in the first, same answer as in the first version. All it is the Gemara is quoting the different versions of how this discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish went. And with each one of them, you have the same question. If you're going to say that we're talking about a bunch of hairs, if we're going to say we're talking about one hair, how does one hair serve as a yam? Okay. The Ika de Masni Lo Amasnisim. Then you have another version. Others learn that the machlokas of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is not in connection with the braisa about the two half kazesim that were attached to bones, but rather in connection with our Mishnah. That our Mishnah had started off over that the skin or the gravy or the kifa, the stuff that's collected at the bottom of the pot, etc., mitzvah from the time of Tumas Arichlin. We said they combined together for Tumas Arichlin. Omer Rish Lakish, Lo Shanu, and one of the things we mentioned in the Mishnah was bones. We mentioned that bones are combined together. So Omer Rish Lakish, Lo Shanu, Esem Dehavish Shomer. So Rish Lakish says that would only apply to a bone, which is a shomer, because if you have marrow in it, then it's a shomer on the marrow. Avol Nimo Lehavish Shomer. But in this version, Rish Lakish says that if you have a hair attached to the meat, it won't be a shomer. But Rabbi Yochanan Omer, after the Nimer Nami, have a shomer, and Rabbi Yochanan would say that even one hair by itself could be a shomer. So in the previous version that we had, that Rish Lakish was saying that a hair can't be a yad. In the previous versions, Rish Lakish was saying it could conceivably be a shomer, it just can't be a yad.
One
individual hair. Now we're saying in this new version over here that Rish Lakish is saying it can't be a yad. It can't be a yad because you can't pick it up.
So it's not a yad.
He would say that it can't be a shomer. It could maybe be a yad. Again, in the previous versions, we said that Rish Lakish says it can't be a yad, but it could maybe be a shomer. Now we're saying the other way. Now we have a new version of Rish Lakish's statement in connection with our Mishnah that it can't be a shomer. It can't be a shomer. Maybe it could be a yad, maybe not, but a shomer it can't be. Rabbi Yochanan Amasu Niminami Habi Shomer, and Rabbi Yochanan would say that even an individual hair could be a shomer.
He didn't change his opinion in this second version.
Well, in the first version, we said we were talking about whether it can be a yad or not. Here we're talking about whether it can be a shomer or not. So different machlokas. Okay. Amalei Rish Lakish Lo Rabbi Yochanan. So Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, what do you mean that the hair can be a shomer? Or me is a shomer or gabi shomer? So in the first version, we had Rabbi Yochanan ask this to Rish Lakish. How can you tell me that a hair is considered a shomer? How can you tell me that when we quoted the Mishnah before, we said a piece of meat, the size of a kazayas, that has skin attached to it and has a hair sticking out of it. So we said if you touch the hair, then you tummy. So Rabbi Yochanan said, I hold the hair as a yad, so of course you become tummy from it. You are arguing that a hair can't be a yad, so how does that work? And Rish Lakish answers, because the hair penetrates all the way through the skin. Now in our version, it's the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who's going to need the hair to penetrate all the way through. Otherwise, how is it a shomer? So in this version, Rish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, "Meek a shomer or gabi shomer? Since when do you have a shomer on top of a shomer? The skin is a shomer. The hair would be a shomer on top of a shomer. How are you telling me from that?"
You said that the hair is part of the skin.
No.
And it's the same shomer.
No. How is it part of the skin? And it's not. I mean, it grows from the skin, but so what? You could say the same thing. The skin grows on top of the flesh, but each one has a different function. And the answer is chachuli mechachul. And again, the answer would be that Rabbi Yochanan would say the hair penetrates all the way through the skin. So he would say it's not. It's a, so therefore, it's not a shomer. Agabe shomer. It's still part of the shomer. Parts of the parts of the flesh are protected by the skin. Parts of them are protected by the hair. By the skin, and then in the plate, and then you have here and there in the skin, you have the root of a hair that goes all the way through the skin, and over there you have the hair is functioning as a tremor for that.
One hair next to another.
Next to another, yeah. Okay. So again, the question masked for Rabasa, sort of Acha, Rabasa Yaakov, I guess, asked the same question as he asked in the previous version. Elamei Asa, if you're going to tell me that the hair penetrates all the way through the skin, Tfilin Hechi Kasvinin, how could we ever write Tfilin? Habein in Ksiva Tam of Aleka, it has to be a perfect writing, and you don't, because you have a hole in it. And the answer is the same as before. It's Shemitze Hoda Amri B'Marava. He forgot what they said in Eretz Yisrael called Nekev Shad Yoy over all of any hole that's so small that the ink will just glide right over it. And a Nekev is not considered a hole. And therefore, there's no problem writing tefillin on skin that has holes in it from the hair roots. And by the way, the halacha is even, for example, you're also allowed to write tefillin, or Sefer Torah and mezuzah and whatever, on the skin of a bird, even though the skin of a bird for sure has holes in it from the, well, it's skin for sure, but the point is it for sure has holes in it from the ends of the feathers. You had feathers in it, and therefore you have holes. But nevertheless, the holes, again, are small enough that the ink just glides right over them, and therefore it's fine. Okay. Continues the discussion then, according to this version, Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan l'Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan asks Rish Lakish, if you're telling me that a hair cannot be a shomer, what about this Mishnah we quoted before, Or Sheyesh Alav Kezayis Baser, if you have a piece of skin that you have on a kezayis of meat, Hanegeya b'tziv hayotzei menu, so if somebody touches the tziv, the thread of flesh that sticks out of it, over cider shikinegdo, or he touches the hair that's opposite where the flesh is on the other side of the skin, tome. My love is from shomer. Again, shouldn't we assume the reason he's tome is because the hair is a shomer? Because if it's a yad, it would be too weak to be a yad. So then it must be that it's a shomer because it goes all the way through, as we said. And the answer is loy. No, we could answer mishum yad. Rish Lakish would answer that no, the hair is considered a yad.
Considered a shomer because what?
Because we just said, because it goes all the way through the skin, so therefore it touches the meat, therefore it can be considered a shomer for the meat. But the question is, nima achas, so the answer is loy mishum yad. No, we could answer that the hair is a yad. Again, the question would be nima achas l'may chazya. What could you use one hair for? If you try to pick it up with it, the hair will break. And the answer is, now for the third time, we're going to use Rav Ila's answer. To the Amr of Ila, b'malai, shebein amiloyin, just like Rav Ila explains, the Mishnah in Uchtin is referring to one bristle among all the other bristles. In the same way we can talk to Achnam out here, one hair among many other hairs that are attached. And again, Vahecha Itmaj Rav Ila, where did Rav Ila say his original statement? Ahad Tnan, about this that we learned in the Mishnah in Uchtin, Hamalai Shebeshibolin, the bristles on a stalk of grain, Mitamin and Mitamin Bein the Stavin. They transmit trauma, they become trauma and they transmit trauma, but they don't combine because they're a shomer. They're a yad rather, malai l'maychazia, and again the question is, what would you do with one bristle? And again the answer is Amar Rabbi Ila b'malai shebein amiloyin. We're talking about one bristle among all the others. So three different versions of the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Are we saying that they were arguing about whether it can be a yad? And within that we have two different versions. That one that we said that we when we said that it was a shomer, we asked how could it be a shomer, and the other one was said it seems logical to say it must be a shomer. And the third version was the other way around. They're not arguing about whether it can be a yad, they're arguing whether it can be a shomer, the one hair. But Rish Lakish would say that one hair, that Rish Lakish would say that when you have a bunch of hairs, any individual hair can be considered a yad.
So three versions.
So three versions.
The first version is
that they were arguing about whether the hair can be a yad. One individual hair. We said Rish Lakish holds no, Rabbi Yochanan holds yes.
Right.
Then we said a second version, which was a variation on the first version, that it took up the discussion in the middle and took it in a different direction. And the third version was that they're arguing, just that we said, that we when we mentioned that it can be a shomer, we said it's logical that the hair is considered a shomer rather than a yad, and therefore that's no proof. And the third version was that they're not arguing about it being a yad, they're arguing about it being a shomer. But being a yad, we would say we seem to be saying that it wouldn't, and the answer is that you're right. One individual hair wouldn't be a yad, only if you have a bunch.
What's the difference between the second and the third version?
Because in the second version they're arguing about whether it's a yad, and in the third version they're arguing about whether it's a shomer. Okay. Yeah. Okay, fine. All right, so that ends the discussion about yad and shomer. So we have a number of points that we have so far. We have a yad is different than a shomer in that a yad does not combine together to make up the shiur tumah, whereas a shomer does, except when the thing itself is intrinsically tumah, like a nevela, then the shomer does not count towards the shiur of a nevela. We established how we know all these concepts, and we talked about some of the details of what makes something a yad versus what makes it a shomer, and there's no such thing as a shomer on top of a shomer, and what's the minimum size that you need to be attached for it to be attached to for it to be a yad or a shomer, et cetera. So, okay.
A yad could also sometimes be also mitzad, right? Sometimes.
So we said that a yad cannot be mitzad. No, we said unless it's also a shomer. Okay, fine. If it has marrow, then it's not a yad, it's a shomer.
How can a yad be a shem at the same time?
For example, a bone that has marrow inside it and meat on the outside. So it's a yad for the meat on the outside and a shem for the marrow on the inside. Okay. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, v'horoytev. So we mentioned, we started mentioning in our Mishnah, at the beginning of our Perek, we said ha'or v'horoytev. So we've been talking about the skin, that's a shomer. And then the next thing the Mishnah mentioned was roytev. So my roitev, what do we mean by roitev, that combines together to make up the amount of food for tumas eichlin? Omar rava shumna. The rava says it means the fat of the meat. They have fat. That's
crazy.
One second. Rava is saying that it means the fat that floats to the top, that floats to the top of the soup. Omale Abayas. Abayas says, in that case, why do you only have to say that it combines together with the meat? Who asked me yitama tumas eichlin? The fat by itself is considered food. You can eat it. So it should be matama tumas eichlin all by itself. Our Mishnah seems to be saying it won't be matama tumas eichlin if you collect it by itself. But if you have the meat and you have some of this roitim on it, then it'll combine together. So why shouldn't it? Ella chalav dekorish, or chala dekorish, it says on the side of here. Rather, what it means is it's talking about the juice that comes out of the meat and congeals on the surface. So that's what we're talking about. So you wouldn't eat it by itself, but you wouldn't eat that juice that comes out of the meat by itself. But once it congeals on the surface, then you would eat it with it.
Yes.
So the question is, my area
consistent of fat.
Yeah, well, but it may have some fat in it, but it's not only fat. In other words, it's fat. Okay, so the question is, my area Kodesh, in that case, why does it have to be congealed? And if it's still liquid on the surface, why shouldn't it also count towards the kibbeh, the Ketumas Eichlin? The Omer Shlokish, just like we find the din that Rish Lakish says, Sir Shal Gabe Yerek, the juice that's on top of a vegetable, which is, Rashi has two explanations. One is it means that the vegetable itself exudes some juice. And the other explanation is that we're talking about a dressing that you dip the vegetable into. Whatever it is, mitzadus for kakesebes b'yemakipurim, it combines together with the vegetable to make up the size of a kakesebes, which is the size of a date, as far as the dinim of eating on Yom Kippur. The dinim of eating on Yom Kippur, we have a person eat, normally when we talk about eating in Torah, it's usually a kezayis. But with Yom Kippur, the Torah doesn't actually say in so many words that you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. It says ta'anu esnachisechem, you have to afflict your souls. And therefore, the Gemara explains in Yoma, it means you need a larger amount, you need a kakasebeth, the size of a large date, because the Chachamim figured out that's the amount that a person needs to eat in order to not feel inuri, in order to not feel afflicted. It's miyas v'daite, the expression in the Gemara. It calms him down. So therefore, it's larger than a kazayis. How much larger? The poets can talk about whatever. The point is, there's that certain amount. Now, the thing is like this. The Mishnah tells us over there, in Yoma, that if a person eats and drinks on Yom Kippur, the amount that he ate and the amount he drank, you need to the amount of eating that he'd be chayev for, or that'd be chayev malchus or kares for, would be if he ate a kakasebis, we said. The amount he would have to drink to be chayev would be kinloy lugma, a cheekful. Eating and drinking don't combine. So if you were to eat a half of kakasebis, let's say, and then drink a half of kinloy lugma, or three quarters of kinloy lugma, or whatever, so that it adds up to a kakasebis altogether, a volume, it wouldn't make him chayev malchus or kares.
It's true. You said it. They don't add up.
That's the point. Food and drink don't combine together. So let's suppose we were to say that a kakasebis is 2 ounces. So if you would eat 1 ounce of food and drink 1 ounce of liquid, it wouldn't combine together to make them chayev, unless either one of them was by itself kesevis or kimloy lugmav, as the case may be. Yet Rish Lakish tells us that if a person eats a vegetable with the sear that's on it, again, either the juice that came out of the vegetable or the dressing that he dipped it into, then it does combine. It combines together to make up the shiur kakasevis, even though the juice over there is liquid. So why should it be any different over here? If the juice that came out of the meat, which is how we're explaining now, Rotev, is still liquid, why shouldn't it count towards the Kabeza for Tumas Oakland? Why are we saying only if it's congealed?
Maybe it's different.
The answer is Hosem Meshum Yisuvi Daitahu. The reason why a person is chayav for eating a certain amount on Yom Kippur, why he's chayav for eating a chakiseves, and why only if he eats that amount or drinks that amount by itself, is because the chachamim know for a fact that's what it takes in order to calm him down, in order to make him feel better and not feel the affliction. Therefore, even if, so granted, if he were to eat something and then separately drink something, it wouldn't combine together unless either one of them by itself is a shear. But here, the Chachamim knew that just because he's eating something which is still partially liquid, in this case, he's eating a vegetable that has dressing on it, it still works to be miyas v'daite. The combination still works to make him feel better. And therefore, he'd be chayim. Hacha mishum etzirufihu. But over here, it's a matter of combining them together. Therefore, ikarish mitzadif, therefore only if it's congealed, can it combine together, because tumas oichlin involves a certain quantity of solid food or a certain quantity of liquid. Eloi karish levit tzadif, if it's not congealed, then it doesn't combine together, because you have food and you have a drink, and food and drink don't combine together. So over there, the only reason they combine is because the combination of this particular food and this particular liquid is miyas v'daitis.
Karish means
it's hon, congealed, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Then we said in the mission of Akifa, we said the next thing that combines together for Tumas Oichlin is the Kifa. So what is my Kifa? Omer Rabba, Robert says on the side, Pirma. That is the shreds of meat. That's when you cook a stew or something, you have little bits and shreds of meat that fall to the bottom and congeal over there. Again, Omer Abayas. Abayas says, why are you only talking about that combining together with the rest of the food? Who asked me to tell me Tumas Oichlin? It's still part of the meat. It should have tumas oichlin on its own. It's still perfectly edible by itself.
Small pieces of meat.
Yeah. So therefore, if you have a kabeza of it combined together, so that you scrape from the bottom of the pot, why shouldn't it have tumas oichlin on its own? And yet the Mishnah seems to be saying that only if you have, let's say, 3/4 of a kabeza of the actual meat, and then you had 1/4 kabeza of this kifa, then it would combine together. Why? Why wouldn't a kabeza of kifa by itself be enough? Ella, Omer, Rapapa. So Rapapa says, no, actually, what kifa means is tabling. Kifa over here means the spices. These are spices, Tosfos elsewhere points out. We're not talking about, for example, now, in Gemara terminology, spices doesn't just mean things like nowadays that you shake from a container. It also includes anything that you would use to flavor the food, to flavor the food. For example, it includes also onions and garlic, but it also includes things like pepper and sage and so on and so forth. Anyway, the point is that Tosfos, there's a Tosfos in Nida that makes a distinction. When we're talking over here, as what Dr. Papa is saying over here, the tavlin, we don't mean the kind that are meant to be, that could also be eaten by themselves, like onions or garlic. For sure, of course, those would also be metamic tumas oichlin by themselves, because they're edible individually. What we mean is things more like pepper or thyme or whatever, condiments that you only put, you season the food with them, but nobody ever sits down to eat a cabeza of pepper of pepper by itself. So that's what we're talking about over here. Pastas also, I don't know, but the point is, therefore, that's what we mean over here, that therefore it's only metamic, it only has tumas oichlin in combination with the meat. But if you had, let's say, a kabeza of pepper that got to the bottom of the pot, it wouldn't be metamic tumas oichlin by itself, because you don't eat it by itself.
Well, it's in the ground.
Well, we're talking about ground. Yeah, we're talking about ground pepper or whatever. Okay, Tosfos a little bit earlier. Yeah, okay. Tosfos in the previous paragraph actually mentions definitely there are times when kifa can mean, we had a thing before about shrotim, that the kifa of them, we had about the kifa of shrotim. Definitely there are times that kifa does mean the shreds of meat. The question was, as far as our Gemara over here, does it mean that? And then Abaye is saying that. Oh, fine. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to digress to talk about the issue of, we were talking about congealed liquid from the meat. That congeals on the surface. What? Karish, yeah. So now we're going to talk about, now we're going to digress to talk a little bit about different other kinds of isurim that come in one state. What happens if you eat them in a different state? For example, we know the Torah tells us, let's say you're not allowed to eat dam. Dam is usually liquid. So the question we're going to have to figure out is, would a person be chayav if it's solid, if it's solidified? And vice versa. For example, the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to eat chalev. Would you be chayav if you liquefy it?
So Dan, we had some sugya with the crops.
We didn't really talk about whether it's also to eat. We talked about as far as the can sprinkle on the veil. Yeah, fine. You have to, right. But here we're talking. Okay, fine. But here we're going to talk about as a person chayiv karis for eating it. So, tnan hosam. Now, I mean, Tosfos points out, I mean, we know definitely, we know in a number of places in Shas that when a person, that in general we say shtiyah b'chlal achila, when the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat such and such, it also includes drinking. But the question is, fine, that's talking about things that are normally drunk. For example, let's say wine, oil, whatever, but here we're talking about things, let's say chelev, that chelev, well, you could, if a person, if blood was an ostrich, we might well drink it. There are tribes in the world that drink blood. That's not the point. The point is, for example, chelev naturally comes as a solid. So it's not normal to drink it, even if it was mutter. So that's the question. In other words, we're talking about things that are not normally consumed in a certain state. That does still keep its identity as far as it. So tnan hosam, we learn in a Mishnah elsewhere. It's actually not a Mishnah, it's actually a Braisa. So once in a while you have cases where the Gemara introduces a Braisa with tnan. Hikba sadam v'ochloi, if somebody congealed blood and ate it, oy shehimcha sachelev gmoi, or he melted down chelev and drank it and swallowed it down, chayev, he's gonna be chayev kari. So the question is, b'shlema hikbar tadam ba'achloi, I can understand if he congealed blood and ate it, why he should be chayiv, even though you could say once congealed, it's not considered blood anymore. Because you could say, kidin da'ach be'achshuvei achshuvei, the fact that he took the trouble to congeal it means that he considered it something to be something that has shivus, something that has importance to him, and therefore, in other words, it's considered chayiv. Rashi, by the way, learns that we're talking about over here. How did he congeal it? It's not just that he left it out to dry. Rashi explains that he put it on the fire and it congealed from the heat.
If he left it to dry, wouldn't it?
Well, then, because then you couldn't say actually. The fact that he just left it out to dry is not enough to make it actually.
Yeah, actually, he could have left it there with the intent to...
No, but not necessarily, because he didn't actually do anything to it. As opposed to if he put it on the fire, that's an actual action. So Rashi learns that we're talking about putting it on the fire. Tosfos argues that and says that, no, we've discussed previously that if blood is cooked, then a person is not chayav karis for eating it. So therefore, Tosfos learns we have to be talking about over here that he congealed it by putting it out in the sun.
If he had
cooked it, Tosfos says he wouldn't be chayav karis for it anyway. Because it's cooked. Then it's not considered blood on a daraisa level anymore. But Rashi disagrees with that. Anyway, the point is, with blood that he made congealed by the heat of the fire or by the heat of the sun, as the case may be, fine, actually. But you have to ask about this case where he liquefied, where he melted down the fat and drank it, the chelev and drank it. Why? Why should he be chayev? Achilak sivabe. The pasuk says that a person is chayev kares for eating chelev. V'halav achilahi. This isn't eating.
Himcha means what?
Himcha means he melted it. Yeah. Rendered it, whatever. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, it has to be eating. This isn't eating. Amar shlokish, amar kron nefesh. Yes, but when the pasuk mentions the concept of not eating chelev, it says that b'nichrasah nefesh, it says that the nefesh that eats chelev is going to get kares. B'nichrasah nefesh, therefore, the rabbi says, ashoisa, that comes to include also somebody who drinks it. How does nefesh include somebody who drinks? Rashi explains, because the word nefesh means, we usually translate nefesh as a soul, but the word nefesh sometimes also means desire. Like, for example, you have what a person wants to do. For example, in Parshas Chayesore, in Yeshet Nafshechem, that Abraham tells Bnei Ches, if you desire to help me out, then do me a favor and talk to Ephraim that he should sell me Maros HaMachpelah. So we see that the word nefesh sometimes means the desire to do something. So over here, he has a desire to drink it. Because that's what he did. He melted it down and drank it. Therefore, the word nefesh comes to include also when he drank it because he also did it out of desire, out of tiger. So he had hanok from it, in other words.
Even though it's not
the normal way of eating chelev, it's not an original state, and it's not the normal way of drinking it yet. Okay. So that's as far as chelev. Tanya nami gabi chomets kahedav. Now, we have a similar braisa regarding chomets. Him chohu ugmoi, if a person melts down chomets and swallows it down, so he takes, let's say, a piece of bread or something and melts it down and swallows it. Im chometsu, so if what he liquefied was chomets, onush koris, and is in chayev koris for drinking it on Pesach. Im masahi, and if he did the same thing with masa, if he took masa and liquefied it, pureed it, whatever. A person is not yotze the mitzvah of eating masa by eating such masa that was liquefied. So we have to figure out. I can understand why a person is not yotze the mitzvah of masa by eating such masa that was liquefied, because lachem oni, because the pasuk says you have to eat lachem oni, bread of poverty. The high lav lachem oni, who this isn't bread anymore. It's liquefied. Never mind gebrach. Gebrach would be, for example, you wetted it, but it still has the tzura, it still has the shape and the basic consistency of bread. Here we're talking about you liquefied it, you put it in a blender and put it on puree or whatever. Yeah, you can't call it bread anymore. And for that matter, Tosfos says also, for that matter, the Pasuk says, but of tochlu masis, which implies there has to be eating involved, not drinking.
Has liquid on top of it and starts to
if a person can't eat matzah, if a person can't eat hard, no, it is. If a person can't eat hard matzah, then they're able to do that. They get an orange juice or whatever. It can't be based with juice because that would be matzah ashira. That's a different matter. But we're talking about to dip it in afterward. Okay. So I can understand why a person wouldn't be yotze for such a thing as matzah. Ela im chometzu onish koris. But what do you mean that if it was chometz, he would be chayav koris for drinking it? Again, the pasuk says you're not allowed to eat chametz, implying that drinking is not considered eating. Now, granted, Tosfos says, sure, he's going to be chayev malchus for having hanah from chametz, but we're not talking about malchus, we're talking about koris. Koris, it only says eating. So why is he chayev in this case? And again, the answer is Amar Resh Lakish, same thing. Amar Kron Nefesh. Again, the pasuk says Nefesh, that the pasuk. Yeah, the pasuk says nefesh, and again, nefesh means desire. V'nichosan nefesh ahim adas Yisrael. So again, it teaches us l'rabbis d'ashoyse, so it comes to include a case where a person drank chametz. Okay. So far we have that concept by chelev, and we have that concept by chametz. Soon, of course, the Gemara is going to ask why we can't learn one from the other.
And it applies to blood also?
So we said blood we didn't even need a pasuk for. Obviously, achshavei is enough to make mekayeh. So far, we said we have a pasuk nefesh when it comes to chelev, and we have a pasuk nefesh when it comes to chametz. Okay. The tanya nami gavin nivu.
Could we learn it from one to the other?
That's what we have to figure out soon. We have to figure out why the pasuk needs to tell it individually by each case. The tanya nami gavin nivlas oif tohor kai gavna. Then you have a similar brisa about nivlas oif tohor, where we've learned before that if a person swallows a pizayis of the nevela of a kosher bird, then he becomes tummy the moment he swallows it, and the clothes that he's wearing also become tummy. So we have a similar thing. If he melts it down on the fire and drinks it down, then he becomes tame. Bachama tohor. But if he melts it down by putting it in the sun and then he drinks it down, then he'd be tohor. V'habinanba. And we discussed this. Why should there be a difference? Achilak tivabei. As the pasuk says, only if a person eats. One second. First of all, let's deal with the fact. The pasuk says that v'chol nefesh asher toichal nevelo v'tzeifa, and that's the pasuk from which we learn out nivlas oif tohor. So it says toichal. So why should he become tummy by drinking? And the same answer. Amar Resh Lakish. Amar Kron nefesh l'rabes d'ashoyse. So the question is, yichocha b'chama nami. In that case, why should there be a difference whether he melted it in the over a fire or in the sun? And some of the Mephoshim explained that the Gemara waited with the question until now, because if we said we could have thought maybe okay if he becomes Tomei Midrabbanan maybe if he melted it over the fire, but now that we established that there's an actual pasuk that the pasuk says nefesh l'rabis d'shoisa, so it's clear that the concept of him becoming Tomei from drinking down the nivlas oif tohor is daraisa. So why should the Torah be making a difference between whether it's over the fire or in the sun? And the answer is. The answer is, if you left it out and it dissolved and it melted down in the sun, it means that it decayed. And the answer is, b'chama isruchi masra. The answer is, if you left it out in the sun, it decayed. Had it become liquefied in the sun, means that it decayed. It's not roi l'achila anymore. It may not even be roi l'achila chela. Because how else? How does a nivlas oif tohor become liquefied in the sun unless it means that it's spoiled? It's spoiled and it became. It rotted away and it became liquefied as a dead body does in the heat or whatever. So then it's not roi l'achila anymore. So sure, he's not tummy because what he ate is not considered a nivlas oif tohor anymore. It's like he drank down garbage. Okay, fine. So that's the point. He's not tummy. He's only tame when it was a nivlas oif tohor in an edible state, and here it's not in an edible state anymore. Okay. So again, now we have...
It's not considered a nevela?
It can't be considered a nevela anymore, no. In fact, yeah. The general rule is that something is only considered a nevela if it's still roi l'achilas kelev, at least, and here it's not. Okay, so fine. So we have three brises that tell us the same concept, that if you liquefied an iser and drank it, that the person is chayev. We have one by chelev, one by chometz, and one by niglas, by the third one, niglas erchor. Not that he's chayev, but that he becomes chometz. Now we need all those three psukim. We need to say nefesh individually by each one. Because the Torah only mentioned the word nefesh in connection with chaylev, chometz le'osiminei, that you couldn't have learned chometz from it, shekein le'hoitza le'shata kosher. Because chaylev, you could argue, has a chumrah, because there was never a time when it was mutter. The chaylev of an animal, chometz did, because it was mutter until Pesach came. Yeah, well, but before Pesach, it was mutter. And you wouldn't have been able to learn nevela from chaylev shekein on shkaris. So the person eats chaylev is chayev karis. Person eats nevela is person eats nevela is not chayev karis. It just becomes chomet. If it had only said this concept, this nefesh, by chaylev, we couldn't have learned either of the other ones. We couldn't have learned chomet because chomet has a shata kosher, and we couldn't have learned nevela oichtar because the person is chayev karis for eating nevela oichtar. And if the Torah had written this word nefesh only in connection with chometz, you would say chelav like osimine. You couldn't learn chelav from chometz. Shekein like hucha mikvali, because there's no exceptions to the concept of chometz. During Pesach, there's never a time you're allowed to eat chometz, as opposed to chelav. You have an exception. Chelav of a chaya is mutter. Well, actually, the Gemara is going to discuss soon. Not shasa kosher. No. Not shasa kosher. No. Chelev of a behemah has no shaka kosher. But on the other hand, chelev of a chaya is mutter, period. So in other words, when the Torah tells us you can't eat chelev, there's an exception to it. Certain kinds of chelev you can eat. As opposed to when the Torah tells us you can't eat chometz on Pesach, there are no exceptions. You can't learn chelev from chometz. Come on. That's not considered an exception. No, it's not considered. The Kuach Nefesh is not considered an exception. That's yeah. Okay. So you couldn't have learned chelev from chometz. You wouldn't have been able to learn nevela from chaylev, again, for the same reason, from chometz, shekein onur shkoris, because the person eats chometz on Pesach, he's chayv karis. The person eats the nivlach oishtar, he's not chayv karis. He's chayv malchus. Well, he's chayv malchus for eating a nevela, but more to the point, he becomes tome, but the point is, there's no karis involved. The e kotz rachmana ben nevela, and if the Torah had only written the word nefesh in connection with the nevela to say that if the nivlach of Torah was liquefied and he drank it down, that he becomes tomei, you would say hanach le'asimina. You couldn't have learned either of the other ones from it. Shekein matama, chometz and chela. Shekein matama, because the nivlach of Torah has a unique feature of making the person tomei when he swallows it. Chometz, the person doesn't become tomei when he eats chometz on chela. Chela, the person doesn't become tomei when he eats. So you couldn't have learned any one of the three from any of the other from the other ones. So the question is again, chodem et chodem le'as. Yeah. Okay. You couldn't have learned any one of them from one. What about kesi chodem itazi? Let's try to see if we can make a tada shava and learn one of them from two of the other ones. We're back to that again. Yeah. So the question is, hey kesi, which one are you saying the Torah shouldn't have had to write, and we would have learned just from the other ones? Should you say the Torah should not have had to say the word nefesh by nevela, and we would learn it by a tzada shava from chelev and chometz? Can't. Malahanach shekein onesh karis. Chelev and chometz both involve karis. Nivlat oif tohu doesn't. So we couldn't have learned nivlat oif tohu from them. Should we say the Torah didn't have to write chometz, and we could have learned it from the combination of nevela and from the combination of nevela? No, because nevela there's no taurus.
No,
but malahana should write malahana. Shekein lohosel and shata kosher. The difference is that chelev. The difference is again chelev and nevela never had a shata kosher, whereas chometz does. Now the obvious question is, what do you mean that a nevela didn't have a shata kosher? It was alive at one time. It wasn't always a nevela. The Tosfos gives two answers. Number one, in its current state, as a nevela, it never had a shaka kosher. The other answer Tosfos says is, when it was alive, it had a different issur on it, Eivim and Achai, or that it wasn't shechted. So there was always some issur on it, as opposed to chometz, there was no issur on it before Pesach. Yeah. And as a nevela, it's always osur, yeah. And even before it became a nevela, it was osur as a live animal, yeah. Okay. Should we say the Torah didn't have to write the word nefesh by chelev, and we could have learned it from the combination of nivlas oif tahor and chometz? Can't. Malahana Shekhen Lahurta Mitzvah. How could you compare? Those two things, there's no exception. There's no exception to eating chametz on Pesach. There's no exception where eating a niblas oif tohor does not make a person tameh. Tameh b'chelev, shahurta mitzvah. As opposed to chelev, you have an exception because there's cases where you can eat chelev. Well, that's where we have to figure out. Umayniu. What do we mean there's an exception by chelev? Ilema chelev behema, legavoya. Do we mean the fact that you're able to offer the chelev of a behema on the mizbeach? It's called achilas mizbeach, fine. But the problem with that is, nevela na, in that case, nevela also has an exception. Nevela nami ishtaroi malika doif legavoya. When it comes to nevela, you have a bird that malika was done to it. In effect, it's nevela because shchita involves a knife and cutting.
Oh, yeah.
And here it's, yeah, we had this discussion before. And that's fine. The point still remains. It is a nevela and it's an exception to the rules. And you see, therefore, that a nevela is offered on a mizbeach. So you can't say that a chelev is an exception because it's offered on the mizbeach, because in that case, the vela is also offered on the mizbeach. The el chelev chaya lahedyet. So you're going to say that maybe what we mean is the exception is that when it comes, a regular person is allowed to eat the chelev of a wild kosher animal, like a deer. Well, the question is, the vela nami yishtiroi, malika b'chatas oif l'koinim. In that case, I can find you an exception where a human being is allowed to eat an vela also. A chatas oif. Again, you do malika to it, and yet the koinim eat that bird, even though it would normally be an vela. So we see, therefore, that just like chelev has an exception, that's fine. The point still remains. The turtle also tells us you can eat chelev of chaya. The point still remains. You were arguing before that you couldn't have learned any, that you couldn't have learned one, that you couldn't have learned any from the other, but why not? Just like chelev has an exception, because you have the chelev of certain animals is also the chelev of other ones is mutter. The same thing with nevela. Usually a niblas oif tahor is mutter, but when it was a chatas oif and malika was done properly, then it's mutter. The answer is no. No, we are in fact talking, the exception with chelev is the fact that chelev of a chaya is allowed to be eaten by a regular person. So you're asking in that case, then what do you mean? We see that koyanim are eating nivlas oif. The answer is that's different because koyanim mishokan gavoya kozot.
What is the
kashalach koyanim? You're asking that in that case, with koyanim you have the same exception, that they eat chatas oif, which is nivlas oif. So you see that just like there's an exception for chelev, there's an exception for nevela. The answer is it's not considered an exception because koyanim mishokan gavoya kozot, because the koyanim are zoiche in what they eat from Hashem's table. In other words, essentially the fact that this bird is mutter to eat is because of the korban. The result of that is Hashem takes it from the mizbeach and like offers it as a portion to them, as if like they're servants at the table who get a portion of the food on the table. For us Yisrael would be an avela, right? But the point is, it's not that there's, obviously, let me say again. The point is, in other words, we were thinking that what it is the fact that the Kohen is able to eat this Nivlas Oftar is, the usual rule is a person can't eat an Avela, but in this case, the Torah makes an exception for the Kohen. The answer is the Torah is not really making an exception for the Kohen. The Torah is telling us the Nivela of an Oftar is also to eat, however, it's mutter to offer on the Mizbeach, and in certain cases, Hashem then takes it as an offering that was supposed to go on the Mizbeach and instead gives it to the Kohen to eat. So it's not a separate exception that was carved out for the chaylev. So we can still say that with chaylev, there's an actual exception carved out. You're allowed to eat chaylev of a chaya without any reference to the korban. As opposed to the fact that a kohen can eat a nivlas oif tahor is basically he's eating something that by rights should have belonged on the mizbeach.
Is he obligated to eat it?
Well, it's part of the kapara of the owners, yeah. But the point is that it's not really a separate exception.
Why do you say he's allowed to eat the
chaylev
of a chaya? Anybody's
allowed to eat
the chaylev. Why did you say that? Where do you see that should be an Easter on a chayah?
That's fine. The fact is it's not. But the point is we see that it's an exception. We see that when the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat chaylev, it exempts chayah from it. On the other hand, when the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat an avela, there is no exception to it. All it is the Torah is telling us you're not allowed to eat an avela. However, there is a type of nevela that goes on the mizbeach, and then Hashem takes it off the mizbeach and gives it to the kohenim to eat. So practically speaking, they're eating it, but it's not that an exception was carved out that a human being should be able to eat it. It's rather an exception was carved out that Hashem should be able to eat it, and Hashem in turn takes it from the table and gives it to the Kohen. So we can still say, therefore, that the difference is Chelev there's an exception to, and Nevela there's no exception to, and Chometz there's also no exception to. So therefore, that's it. So far,
let's say technically, if a Kohen who didn't want to eat it to the Kohen, whatever reason, they would not eat it.
Then they couldn't eat it. Exactly. Then the veil would be definitely across the board that you can't eat it. Exactly. So therefore, we're still left with, and the discussion's not over yet, but we're left with that yes, each one of these three things, and each two of these three things has some feature that the other one doesn't have. Chometz and Chelev are both Chayiv Kares. Chometz and Nevela both have no exception to the rule. Because again, the fact that the Koyanim can eat the Nevela is not considered an exception. And Nevela and Chelev both have an exception because there was no Shata Kosher as opposed to Chometz. So that is why the Torah needed to say the word Nefesh individually by each one, because we could not have learned any one of them from any one or any two of the other ones.
Or the three for that.
Well, that's why we need all three, because each one individually needs to be learned by itself, because we couldn't have learned from the other one. But nevertheless, the din still applies by all of them, that any one of those three, if a person liquefies it and drinks it, then he's chayav whatever punishment it is, or he becomes tomei in the case of a Nivla Sotar. Except we said unless he liquefies the Nivla Sotar in the sun, and that's not because there's really a difference between the sun and the fire, but just because if he liquefied it in the sun, then it means it's decayed, and it's not really considered eating anymore. Okay. Continue.
It liquefies before it decays.
It doesn't. If in the sun it liquefies, it means that it decayed. Come on, still, it means that it decayed first. For it to liquefy would mean that it had to be out there long enough to decay.
So, one second, if you take a magnifying glass and you put the sun on it.
Good question. Maybe that would be the equivalent of Boer. Maybe that would be the equivalent of Boer, of heating it up and on a fire. I don't know. It's a good question. Okay. Fine, so we'll continue the discussion tomorrow.
What time?
Between them and tomorrow. There's a whole question.